Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, Chicago's very own actor Michael Gross has been at this acting gig for over 40 years. Good Catholic boy, Cubs fan. You know him best for playing Michael J. Fox's father, Stephen Keaton, for 7 seasons on Family Ties. His longest running and highest profile role has been Burt Gummer in the Tremors franchise, having played the role for 30 years from the release of the original in 1990 to Tremors Shrieker Island in 2020. He's also a train enthusiast, which I want to talk to you about, and a grad of the University of Illinois Chicago, and has donated his papers to the UIC Library. And to talk about it all, Michael Gross joins us in studio. Michael, welcome in.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to be back in my hometown once again.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how often do you make it back here?
When my parents were alive, I was here several times a year.
Okay.
Now I still have some relatives and good friends and a sister, who lives in downtown Chicago.
Okay.
And I get here at least once a year.
Okay.
If not, you know, a little more sometimes. I'm drawn back always.
I love
always.
That. It's my beautiful city.
It's my place. Yeah.
What do the call letters WGN mean to you?
World's greatest newspaper.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. TV, radio, what memories do you have of radio and television here?
Oh, look, WLS was always a favorite of mine, particularly the high school years.
Yeah,
I was at Kelvin Park High School. On the northwest side. Is I graduated from there in 1965, and we were always listening, and in the earlier than that, listening to Dick Biondi and people like that. I have great I don't forget whose network this was, but I have great memories of my father watched every night on television at 10 o'clock. Newscaster and weather forecaster, Fahey Flynn.
Oh, yeah. That was
and P.J. Hoff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
P.J. Sure. Hoff, who was a weatherman whose sign-off was, "This is P.J. Hoff, the vice president in charge of looking out the window."
Classic legend, by the way.
I love that. I love that. I mean, here he was a weatherman. Yeah. Vice president in charge of looking out the window.
Yeah. Even my high school years, it was Surratt, who you just met, Bob Surratt. In his office, and John Landecker, John Records Landecker. And my dad was listening to Wally Phillips and those morning guys here on GN. But legendary station, both TV and radio.
And, of course, television when I was a kid. You know, there was always Garfield Goose and Fraser Thomas.
Long
before the days of Bozo, there was Garfield Goose.
Yeah,
God bless him.
In the 50s.
Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Sure.
That's how far back I go. Burr Tilstrom.
Well, you look great. You look great. So you went to the University of Illinois Chicago and then Yale. So when did the acting bug hit you?
The acting bug hit me at the University of Illinois at Chicago. God bless him. When I walked into a study hall one day, because they did not have a theater on campus. I was in the first year, 1965, that the campus opened. They had not yet built a theater, and they were presenting something in a lecture hall, a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. It was free. The price was right. I had a couple of hours to kill between classes, so I went into this production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, sat there, watched it, and was mesmerized. First time Shakespeare had actually made sense to me in a funny way. And I thought, wow, this is really something. These people are good. This has come alive. This is extraordinary. The man who directed that production, William Raffeld, was a professor emeritus, now passed away, from the University of Illinois, Chicago. He became my first acting teacher, mentor, and about 40 years ago, the best man at my wedding.
Oh, get out of here.
Because I walked into a lecture hall to see a play.
Wow.
And Bill was about 8-10 years older than I. He was a student at Northwestern at the time. I was like 17 or 18. He was, 27, 28, and pursuing a doctorate at Northwestern in theater. And he was teaching on the side here at U of I, and he was an amazing man, and I owe almost everything to him and the other good people at UIC who gave me the education I needed.
Amazing. Very different from the lecture hall you walked into yesterday or the day before yesterday. You told me a story on the
phone. Oh, yes. I walked into that same lecture hall.
Yeah, that's cool. That must have been cool.
It was lecture hall A1, and I thought, oh, my God, here it is. Here's where I saw my first play. And there was a lecture going on, something in biology, something about the placenta, about which, by the way, I know very little. And I just stood in the back of the lecture hall, way up in the back, last row at the entrance door, tried to take a picture of the lecture hall for old time's sake. And the lecturer up there, who's, you know, I thought was so busy talking about the placenta, she wasn't noticing anything else.
Yeah.
She saw me up there, stopped the lecture, fixed me in her gaze and said, "Can we help you, sir?" And I, no, sorry. I'm just a visitor. I'm out of here. Bye.
That's great.
Snapped my picture and got out. And I thought, okay.
But a nice flashback being back where you started, right?
Right. And spent a lot of time with the students at UIC the last couple of days.
That's cool.
And was so inspired by them, their genius, some of them, some really wonderful raw talent, and some talent that's developed well beyond the raw stage and is looking very good, and just their passion for things, the same passion I shared. We're talking over 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I got out of there I left there in 1970.
Okay.
Never to return full time to Chicago.
Yeah.
When I went to the School of Drama at Yale from 70 to 73 and never came back full time. But I saw those kids and I went, oh, wow, this is... And I rode the CTA there, just like old times. I was staying with friends in the Loop.
This last couple weeks. Okay.
Yes, I rode the CTA, got off the Blue Line at Halsted.
Love that.
The way I used to all those years ago, that I couldn't afford to go downstate. I didn't have the money for room and board, so went to a commuter campus and I thought, boy, nothing's changed.
Nothing.
Here I am getting off the subway again at Halsted.
Was it clean at least?
It was good.
Okay, good. Well, that was your beginning of your journey, and you said Yale. You did Yale, of course. Then you did some films, and you did some television films, but then Family Ties came along. You know, first really visible national role. How did that come about?
Just blind luck. I had been a theater snob in many ways. I thought I was going to end my days in regional theaters, Broadway, off-Broadway, and had begun to become part of that great repertory company that is New York City. I mean, a certain group of actors who just kind of work all the time in town. And so I had done some Broadway, off-Broadway, television films that were being produced there. And Family Ties came along, and my agent said, "This might be good for you to try." I said, "I haven't done that much television. I'd done one failed pilot, and had missed getting another one, and I was just kind of, which was St. Elsewhere, by the way.
Oh,
I didn't get on that, but it was just before the Family Ties. It was coming on the same year on NBC, as a matter of fact, And he said, "Well, let's try this one." I went, "Oh, okay, hippie father, sounds kind of interesting." And lo and behold, I found myself out in Los Angeles being tested for the pilot. They liked me, and the rest was history. And I thought, well, this will subsidize my theater career.
For a little while.
Is what I thought. Yeah, it'll fail. It won't get picked up, but I'll get a good chunk of money, and I can go do off-Broadway again for no money at all.
When you did the pilot, was it all the original cast that ended up being on the show?
It was the original cast.
Really?
Right. And because Meredith Baxter had made a nice name for herself on things like
Family,
Bridget Loves Bernie, and a number of other things, a number of television films. And, of course, I hadn't the slightest idea who she was, because for years, during prime time, I was on a stage somewhere at 8 o'clock at night.
Right.
And so I watched daytime television.
Yeah,
that was my,
when you could. Yeah.
I would watch Phil Donahue in the morning.
And that from was, here, by the way.
That's what was my television watching. And I'd get home from the theater and shower and go to bed and didn't watch late night television. So I didn't know who anybody was. And I was extremely lucky because, as any actor will tell you, you follow the good work wherever it leads you. The good writing.
Yeah, that's very true.
And Family Ties had that in spades, and how fortunate I was.
Meredith Baxter, same birthday, I believe.
Same birthday as mine. Same birthday, same day, same year.
Wow.
Yes,
yes.
She claims I'm older than she is.
Because
I was born at 3:10 a.m. in Chicago, and she was born in Los Angeles a few hours later, so she likes to lord that over.
Oh, yeah, you win.
Yeah. I'm the old guy.
You win. Great partnership on screen, but a great friendship off screen.
We have stayed close. As a matter of fact, we're floating the idea of coming back here to the University of Illinois and doing some sort of fundraiser for them.
Oh,
she
that's
and I.
Cool.
Among other things, I always say people are just curious to know if we're, one, still alive.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
My, they've aged terribly, those two.
Oh, no.
No, there's a certain curiosity about us, which makes us perfect for something like this. And I've spoken to the university about this, and Meredith and I do this to each other. She'll say, will you help me do, I've got a, in January I'm doing a helping her do a benefit for a theater with in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
So she said, will you come up to Santa Barbara and do this? I said, yeah, but you're going to owe me.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know what I got planned for her yet. But
she might now.
She's going to come back. And I said to the university, well, I said, we got to bring Meredith back here, and she and I have to do something.
I love that.
Together.
I love that. And it pulls on heartstrings to see like you two on stage. This is a show that generations grew up with.
We were pretty fortunate because, as I, you know, when we first began, it was one of the only three networks on television.
That's right. Yeah.
This was still, before Fox came along, right?
Yeah.
There was National Educational Television, finally became known as PBS.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much out there. And so it was big days. The last of the great sitcoms, when I stepped on the Paramount Studios in 1982, there was Laverne and Shirley, Happy Days, mm-hmm. Joni Loves Chachi, Us, and a number of other things.
Yeah.
And you think, whoa, that really was sitcom land.
That was the last moment of that big time in sitcom history.
And where families could sit down together and watch the same show.
That's very true.
Which is kind of interesting. And they still talk about that because I think there's been kind of, for lack of a better word, balkanization of television.
Yeah.
You have your device, your kids will watch their device in their room, you will watch television in this room, somebody will be watching somebody else on their device in another place entirely, and you don't have the commonality of sitting down and watching the same thing together, which was that
was
kind of appointment TV, if you will.
Sports, there's some sports things.
Yeah, right,
you
right,
know,
right,
there's
right.
some things, holiday, or, you know, the family and I will watch together, but that's it.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So that was important, and I think something very cohesive for the country.
We're talking to actor Michael Gross, and there's more with him next on 720 WGM. We are talking to actor Chicago's own Michael Gross, family ties Tremors on the big and small screen for over 40 years. Michael J. Fox, you saw him grow up pretty fast. I mean, that was his first real big time. I mean,
right.
You think about that.
The secret of my success.
The secret of my
success. It just ballooned. And, you know, even before Back to the Future, there was this interesting niche he occupied as this non-threatening adolescent, you know, young man who was not John Travolta. He was a kind of relaxed, friendlier.
Yes.
And young girls were just like, oh, he's so nice. He's so sweet.
He was every kid.
I want to hug him. Yeah. And so that itself was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even before Back to the Future.
You know, Family Ties was all about coming to the middle. You and Meredith playing very liberal characters. Michael's character, the ultimate conservative during the Reagan years. But there was always on the show a place to understand one another and hear people out, right?
Oh boy, yes.
I miss that.
I
different times.
We could use a bit of that. Those were the days when Reagan, a staunch conservative, and Tip O'Neill, Irish and liberal as they come, two Irishmen could sit down in the Oval Office over a glass of Irish whiskey and talk things out and say, how do we do this, Ron? How do we do this, Tip? How do we make a compromise? How do we keep things moving forward?
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I don't understand how some people in Congress today keep a marriage together, because one thing I know over 40 years of marriage is compromise is the word.
Yeah.
And how people don't compromise, I don't get it. You don't get anywhere without it. So I've learned that rule. I've had to keep a marriage together because I wanted to keep a marriage together.
Yeah.
So I had to learn to do what I needed to do. And if you want the country to stay together, I say, you compromise.
I would say that show did that. I was always surprised at the end of the show. Like, I mean, diabolically different thoughts, ideas, and they figured it out and they respected each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the heart of it was, I'm going to tell you what it was too. long before George Bush coined the word compassionate conservative, that's what Michael Fox was. That's what the character of Alex P. Keaton was, because his mind was always driving, make a killing, you know, make the money, make things happen, get it done. But he was a product of his parents, and his parents' heart would always say, yeah, but do the right thing.
Yeah, pulling the, yeah.
And so he was an interesting character and a fascinating character because he was always in conflict with himself, which is to go to the, you know, go to the mat with toughness, but on the other hand,
compassion. Yeah.
And he had that character had that, and it made for great internal conflict, which is the basis of any good character you're going to find anywhere.
So well written. Justine Bateman, Tini Others, Tracy Pollan, even Courtney Cox, pre-Friends. But there was a litany of guest stars, too. I was looking at the list.
Gina Davis? On that list?
Gina Davis, River Phoenix, Martha Plimpton, Christina Applegate, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Don't forget Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, yes. Yeah, he was making the Paramount rounds on the shows at that time when they were trying to get him up there a little bit. But it was pretty cool.
It was a wonderful group, and with just classic people coming in, good stage people who were soon to become other things on television and film. But we had Brownie McGee there once. Brownie McGee, the jazz musician. I was glad we had good people there. And I was glad we never had Reagan. You may or may not know this. It was one of his favorite shows.
No, I did not know that.
Reagan had tried once upon a time to see if, could I be a guest on Family Ties?
Wow.
And I'm glad it didn't work out, because to me, when you always have to reach out to someone like that, it feels like, is our show failing that badly that we have to bring in
big guns
like this to prop us up? The answer was no.
Never.
We weren't failing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something terribly, terribly improbable about the president of the United States showing up in a living room in Columbus, Ohio. You know, come on, of an average American family.
Stretch. A bit of a
exactly.
Stretch.
It just made no sense to me, so I'm glad it never worked out.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the spirit was there.
But they tried.
We're talking to actor Michael Gross, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. We are talking to actor Chicago's own Michael Gross, Family Ties, Tremors on the big and small screen for over 40 years. So I'm sure at the time you wondered what it would be like, but the role of Burt Gummer, which is phenomenal, proved in Tremors that there certainly was.
Lucky me.
Yeah,
lucky me. It was, in fact, my version of what happened to Michael Fox, because, in a sense, the writers fell in love with that character of Burt Gummer and wrote six sequels for him.
Yes,
because he was a great, crazy, over the top, paranoid, OCD guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's comic possibilities in that always. He was serious precisely because he had no sense of humor. He was that serious.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And he had a sense of humor because he had no sense of humor. He was funny because he had no sense of humor. And when writers fall in love with a character, it's the best thing in the world. It's what happened to Mike Fox. They loved playing with that crazy, wonderful, goofy Alex P. Keaton, and that's what happened to me with Burt. And it also answered the question, would there be life after Family Ties, and could it be a character who is very different?
Yeah, which is really great, yeah.
Right. So I considered myself very, very fortunate, and that thing has had legs. We did seven films over 30 years. I don't know that we'll do another, because Lucky Seven seems to be a good place to. And besides, I keep hurting myself every time I do action adventure. At age 75, there comes a point you say, maybe you shouldn't be doing these stunts anymore.
But the character's like always in a minefield. Like that's what you see, picture, like what it's in his head. He's going to step on a bomb at any moment.
And he doesn't have a map.
The neuroses. I know the neuroses is what makes it so funny. You've created an amazing character there.
Yeah. A lucky me, too. It's been popular with a great many other people. I happen to run into the creator of Game of Thrones, George R.R. Martin.
Okay. Yeah.
Ran into him socially because we share homes in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And first time I met him, he said, "Whoa, Tremors!" And George R.R. Martin wound up hosting a Tremors Film Festival last year in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We had people from all over the country, all seven films, presented for free in a multiplex theater in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And we had a great weekend. People from the various films had been there, the director of the original films and writers and stuff like that. It was a wonderful weekend. It turns out that George, another science fiction buff, also happened to like this. So,
well, in comedy, too, you think about this. Comedy and horror, there's not a lot of it. It happened in the 40s and 50s a little bit. Universal tried to cross some things over. Abbott Costello, the monsters and so forth.
Right, yeah.
But it, you know, it's few and far between, but it does work together.
It's very quirky and offbeat, and that's the secret to it.
It is, absolutely. All right, so now you came to Chicago, University of Illinois Chicago. You donated your papers, among other things. It's where you went to school. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, basically, my wife said, clean the house. Right? Why are we living with all your app cray in our house? No, I began to feel this myself. You know, first part of your life, it's about acquisition. And now I'm really about de-acquisition in a lot of ways. And I looked at the banker's boxes of stuff I had saved since high school, college, summer stock, Yale.
Yeah.
Every regional theater I ever worked, Broadway, off-Broadway films.
Talk about
films.
What's in some of these boxes. I'm assuming
it's basically scripts with notations in it and things like that. Variations of scripts, you know, as they've changed over time, as there were rewrites and more rewrites. Reviews, photographs.
That's great.
Interviews. Books on tape that I did, that I've done. There's both video and all sorts of stuff. And I think the stuff that'll probably be most interesting to people are the scripts. Yeah. The various iterations they go through, the various discussions and between myself and producers and writers saying, this scene isn't working. Why isn't this working? Maybe we could do this. What do you think this would be right for the character?
Was that pretty open?
It was particularly,
yes,
particularly
no.
Since I had been so much a part of the Tremors franchise over time, as time went on, there were some people who said, you know a lot more about this than we do. And so it started from, where should we even set this piece? We've done a piece in Antarctica. How about, so we came up the last one with, was somewhere in the tropics. We've never done that. And we start with the what ifs. What if we start this way and he's, you know, completely abjured society. He's had nothing. He's gone away. He's become Robinson Crusoe. That's how Seven started. What if he's just fed up with the world in general? Bert just trying to get away and people keep dragging him back into monster land.
Yeah.
So we keep coming up with ideas and trying to say, does he have, what are his relationships like with people? Is there a woman?
Yeah.
He hasn't had a past partner, woman. This sort of stuff because he's such a loner. And we've tried to challenge him more and more emotionally.
Yeah.
As well, in Tremors 6, we had him meet a son he didn't even know he had.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
In Tremors 7, he came close to death. You know, what is it like for Bert considering that he may not be forever?
Right.
And in the third one, he meets a woman with whom it could be possible to have a relationship. Who was the mother of the son he didn't know he'd ever, and had completely lost track of for years. So we've tried to challenge him emotionally as well as just within the monsters, because that to me is far more interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in straight monster movies. I'm interested in the life of the character and the things that are challenging him in more ways than monsters.
And a lot to play off of for a 30-year period.
Right.
For sure. Yeah. All right. I would be remiss to say, watch Family Ties on our sister station, Antenna TV and Rewind TV, on every single day. Did you know that?
Yes. I didn't know it was every single day.
Yeah.
But I knew it was on Rewind.
Between Antenna and Rewind, it's on every day.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know.
Do you ever dip back into them?
Not very often.
Okay.
Not very often. And but I suppose as I get older and,
maybe,
you know, I'll have
a little bit.
And looking for things to do, I might, because I know there's gold to be mined there, because it was, people tell me it still stands out very well. It holds up well. I must say it's been great to be back at the University of Illinois. The fact that they were kind enough to take some of these papers from me.
Yeah.
Good and bad reviews, by the way. The reviews that start with.
Tells a story.
Yeah, the reviews that start with, you'll never forget the bad reviews. The aptly named Michael Gross. That was the first few words of a terribly bad review I'll never forget.
Wow.
And though I put it all in there.
Yeah.
This is the good, the bad, and the ugly.
It's your story.
For people to learn from my mistakes, from people to just say, hey, look, I'm a kid from the Northwest Side who got lucky, just like you kids who are here today. And I've been visiting with some of the young actors there in the in their acting classes and rehearsals for the last couple of days, and they are inspirational to me. They are where I was all those years ago, and it's great to see their energy and their passion.
Actor Michael Gross, thank you for hanging out in studio.
An absolute pleasure.
And
thank
enjoy
you.
Your time in Chicago.
I always do.